Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Selena by S.M. LaViolette and Minerva Spencer. Narrated by Gabrielle Baker. Chapter 1. London.
Selena, my dear, there is someone here who wishes for an introduction.
Lady Selina Bellamy turned at the sound of her Aunt Ellen's, Viscountess Fitzroy's, voice, and was confronted by the most beautiful man she had ever seen. He was tall and lithe, with dark gold hair and mischievous blue eyes. A Greek god made flesh. Apollo come down from Mount Olympus to frolic with unsuspecting maidens.
Lord Shelton, this is my niece, Lady Selina Bellamy, her aunt said, for once not smiling.
Selina dropped a curtsy. I'm pleased to make your acquaintance, my lord.
The pleasure is all mine, my lady.
Lord Shelton lifted her hand toward his mouth, but was not so louche as to let his lips touch her glove.
I suppose I am too late.
She cocked her head.
Too late?
I fear you have given away all your sets and do not have even a single dance free.
His tragic expression might have been convincing, if not for the laughter dancing in his eyes.
As it happens, I have the supper dance free as my partner was called away on an emergency.
Ah, yes, that poor, poor man.
Selina frowned.
You know who my partner was and what happened to him?
No, he admitted. But anyone called away from a dance with you is a poor, poor man.
Selina laughed.
I will count the minutes until the supper set, he said, bowing to both her and her aunt, and then gracefully moving off into the crowd.
Her aunt inched closer and murmured,
Well, that was unfortunate.
It was? Selina asked, confused.
That man shouldn't be allowed within a league of a gently bred young woman. The only reason Shelton is received anywhere is out of courtesy to the Duke of Chatham.
Selina, who'd been admiring Lord Shelton's broad, elegant shoulders and narrow waist, turned at her aunt's hostile tone.
But what do you mean?
Shelton is Chatham's heir, and might very well become Duke if Chatham never remarries, which is a distinct possibility. But the man is not good ton.
What did he do?
I do not like to repeat gossip, but you should know the story because the dratted man is simply too beautiful and charming for a female's peace of mind.
She leaned even closer.
Several years ago, he dallied with Sir John Creighton's daughter. The girl was very pretty, but the family is not wealthy and her father is a nobody. Shelton took the girl out driving in his carriage, just the two of them, and they were caught by foul weather and stranded. He should have offered her marriage afterward, whether anything happened between them or not. But he did nothing. Perhaps a month later the girl discovered she was with child.
And it was Lord Shelton's?
Aunt Ellen shrugged.
It hardly matters, Selina. The point is that Shelton did nothing to repair the damage he'd caused. It was his cousin, the Duke of Chatham, who stepped in and found the girl a suitable husband.
She clucked her tongue.
The poor woman now lives tucked away in some dreadful backwater with her hayseed husband and, likely, Shelton's babe.
But you don't know the child is his?
Her aunt gave her a pained look.
It doesn't matter, she repeated.
Selina thought it did matter, but kept her opinion to herself.
Why did you introduce me to him if he is such a villain?
Because he is Chatham's heir,
Aunt Ellen repeated. She patted Selina's hand.
There is no harm in dancing with him, but do not be lured into anything careless, By that I mean no strolling on the terrace, stepping into unoccupied rooms, that sort of behaviour.
Aunt Ellen reached out and smoothed her forefinger between Selina's eyebrows.
Don't look so cross, my dear. It makes an unsightly line form. You are simply too beautiful to do anything but smile all the time. Remember, my dear, that is what gentlemen like. Lovely, smiling, agreeable ladies.
Selina wasn't annoyed by her aunt's order to smile. She'd heard that same command from her own mother times beyond counting. Rather, it irked her how quickly rumours spread among the ton, like the one about Lord Shelton. Her aunt didn't know if the child was Shelton's, but that simply did not matter. Give a dog a bad name and hang him. She might not be so sympathetic to the gorgeous lord had she not been the target of gossip herself, albeit not because of anything she had done, but because of her father's gambling. Everyone who was anyone knew that Selina and her five siblings were as poor as church mice, thanks to the Earl of Addiscombe frittering away not only his own wealth but his daughter's dowries. Indeed, church mice were better off, because at least they had a roof over their heads, which might not be the case for much longer for the Earl's offspring. None of the rumours about your father are baseless, are they, Selina? Perhaps there is some truth in the story about Shelton as well. She had to admit that might be true. Lord Shelton did have a rakish look about him. Not that it mattered a whit if Lord Shelton's reputation was deserved or not. The sad truth was that Shelton was a poor man. If Selina was going to save her family from her father's depredations, then only a wealthy husband would serve her purpose. Still, Shelton was divine, and there was nothing wrong with looking, was there? But she would do as her aunt advised and just dance the one set with him. It was the safe thing to do, and Selina was in no position to put her reputation in any danger by acting recklessly. Selina smiled up at the enormous Scottish baron, Lord Fowler, and tried to think of something else to say that might draw him out. Already she'd attempted at least half a dozen conversational gambits, and none of them had dragged more than two or three words from the ginger-haired lord. He was so shy that he didn't even meet her gaze. She'd had her share of tongue-tied dance partners, but never one as bad as Lord Fowler. Indeed, whenever she spoke to him about anything, he turned the colour of a beetroot, and his entire body stiffened, as if he'd just been shocked. Selina decided to take pity on the poor man, rather than pepper him with any more questions. Mercifully, the dance was over a few moments later, and the Baron was escorting her back to her aunt, when Lord Shelton popped up in front of them. He grinned, his laughing eyes lingering on Fowler before sliding to Selina. "This is my set, I believe." He offered her his arm. Selina removed her hand from Fowler's sleeve, but the big man didn't move away. Instead, he glared at Shelton as if he wanted to pull his head off his shoulders. He was such a huge man that Selina was afraid he could actually do it. "Thank you, Lord Fowler," Selina said, taking Shelton's arm and nudging him toward the dance floor, before the Scotsman acted on the violent impulses that were flickering across his freckled face. Lord Shelton leaned toward her as they walked away and whispered, "Talked your ear off, did he?" She choked on a laugh, and then felt terrible. "He is a very nice man, just exceedingly shy." She gave him a wry look. "Unlike some people." Shelton laughed, the infectious sound drawing covetous looks from a group of young ladies. "No, I've never been called shy." He took her hand and settled his other hand on her side. Selina had to steel herself to keep from shivering under his touch.
I'll wager you are frequently subjected to mooning looks from men like Fowler.
That is not kind, my lord. He pursed his lips.
No, it is not. I apologize.
Selina saw the twinkle in his eyes and shook her head.
You are incorrigible. He laughed.
I've been told it is part of my charm.
The orchestra struck up the waltz and they began to dance. Naturally, the man moved as divinely as he looked, holding her lightly as they floated around the dance floor. After a few moments of silence, he said,
Your aunt warned you about me, didn't she?
Selina blinked at him uncertainly.
I can tell she did, because you are eyeing me with suspicion now.
He gave her a silly, squinty-eyed look, as if to demonstrate, and Selina laughed.
There, that is better, he said, smiling.
It was rude of me to ask you such a question, wasn't it?
It had been rude, and so was the question. Selina had no idea how one should answer. Luckily, Shelton was happy enough to go on without a response from her.
I usually don't mind if I've been tried, judged, and hanged before I even dance with a woman, but I feel it more keenly with you.
Why am I so different? Selina asked, but inside she was groaning. He was about to start composing odes to her lips or eyes.
I have been watching you. For weeks now.
She lifted an eyebrow.
Indeed?
Shelton chuckled.
I'm sorry. I dare say I sound a bit like a lunatic.
He sounded like something, but she wasn't sure what.
Selina smiled slightly and said, Nothing so extreme, my lord.
I just meant that I've seen the furor you cause whenever you enter a room, and I've noticed how every man in the ton, from newly minted lords like Fowler to hardened sophisticates like Chatham and Moncrief, follows you with his eyes. And yet,
he broke off and shook his head.
No, I've already said too much.
Selina wanted to roll her eyes. Instead, she said,
Please, do finish now that you've started.
He gave her a cheeky grin.
Now you are vexed.
No, but I am curious as to where you are going with your observations.
With the exception of Fowler, who is obviously too flummoxed by your beauty to utter so much as a peep, every time I watch you dancing, you smile and listen, and your partner talks and talks and talks.
Rather like you are doing right now, she thought,
but of course didn't say it.
Shelton laughed.
Just like I am doing right now.
Selina smiled, and this time it was genuine. His self-deprecating humour really was irresistible.
Does anyone ever ask you about yourself, my lady, or how you like to spend your time, or what you think about being yet another commodity on the marriage mart?
This time he wasn't laughing or teasing. It was so unexpected a question that she was, yet again, struck dumb.
They don't, do they?
He said, looking quite grim.
They don't look past your perfect face to the person who lives behind it. Not because they don't know how to ask questions, but because they don't want to. They simply don't care.
She cocked her head. And I suppose you do?
He gave a bark of rueful laughter.
I deserved that.
They danced in silence for a moment, and it was Selina who broke it this time.
You are correct, my lord. Gentlemen rarely ask me questions about anything. But then I've noticed that most people feel more comfortable talking about themselves.
Most men, you mean. While ladies are taught to keep their thoughts and opinions to themselves and ooh and ah at our every pronouncement. As if every man is a profound genius.
His words so perfectly echoed her own thoughts that she was amazed.
Do you speak so candidly to all your dance partners, my lord?
No, Lady Selina, I do not.
So, why are you saying all this to me?
Because I feel like you might understand my feelings about these functions better than most. Do you?
I don't know, my lord. What are your feelings on the subject?
Just that these sorts of occasions are about as dignified as a horse auction. Everything is about appearance and form. There is no substance here, and none is wanted. If a person is beautiful, that is what they are, all they are. What is inside their head or heart is irrelevant to the ton.
He gave her a wry look.
You must forgive me for putting it so bluntly and inelegantly. But how can a person not lament that the only way to become acquainted with members of the opposite sex is to engage in some of the most vapid, superficial social commerce known to mankind?
He shook his head, as if Selina had disagreed, and then went on to say,
Oh, I am fully aware that I should just bite my tongue and be quiet. I should be grateful that I'm even admitted into houses such as this one, given my tattered reputation. If not for my family connections and, to a lesser extent, my handsome person, I dare say I'd be on the outside peering in.
His eyes glittered, and for a moment Selina saw real anger behind his carefree smile.
Now, if I were an ugly man, well, I suspect my reception here would be quite different.
Do you really believe that?
Oh, yes. I'm afraid we live among people who care for nothing but appearances.
It was so shocking to hear her own conclusions given voice that Selina spoke before she could stop herself.
I thought I was the only one who felt that way.
There are not many who feel that way, and those of us who do must hide our thoughts.
His eyes flickered over her.
You are an exceptionally beautiful woman, and when most men look at you, that is all they see. A prize to be won, a trophy to possess and display.
He nodded sagely.
I am familiar, to a lesser degree, with that manner of thinking, my lady.
Selina could well imagine he was. Of all the gentlemen she'd met during her first weeks in London, there was nobody to match him in appearance, or charm for that matter.
It is insupportable to be treated as nothing more than an appealing cut of meat. No curiosity as to what we are thinking or feeling.
He said in a quiet but forceful tone,
I think that it is the gravest of all insults, when a person is not even considered worthy of curiosity.
Selina had never thought about it that way, but it was true.
And if a person ever dares to say that they would like to be more than merely a pretty face, they are considered the worst sort of ungrateful wretch for wanting too much.
Selina nodded vigorously.
Things are so easy for you, she mimicked. What could you ever have to worry about? As if being pretty means the rest of one's life is without trouble or grief or pain. As if one's appearance will save one from getting tossed out of one's home.
Shelton's eyes widened at her last pronouncement, and Selina was just beginning to wonder if she'd overstepped when he nodded and exclaimed,
Just so.
His raised voice drew disapproving glares from an older couple beside them. Selina and Shelton looked from the scowling man and woman to each other, and then, once he'd whirled them out of earshot of the frowning pair, they both burst out laughing. Shelton gave her a rueful smile.
I'm sorry if I became overly excited.
Please don't be. You have no idea how much I've needed to talk to somebody who understands.
He nodded sagely.
Are your parents pushing you, telling you how it is your duty to rescue the family fortune?"
Her face heated. "I dare say all of London knows of my family's diminished circumstances and my father's part in it."
Shelton shrugged. "It doesn't matter who your father is. All parents are the same when they have attractive offspring to bring to the auction block."
He leaned closer and lowered his voice.
"I saw you dancing with Chatham and Moncrief earlier."
He gave her a sly look.
"You have been honoured above all the other young women who've come out this year. Or at least that is what Moncrief thinks. And probably Chatham too."
"The Duke of Chatham was actually a very attentive dance partner," she said, wondering if she imagined the flicker of disappointment in Shelton's eyes at her words. "As for Moncrief, well, he is not alone in feeling that he has honoured me. My aunt has not stopped reminding me that he has not danced at one of these functions in years."
"It is true. Probably not since his first season, which was longer ago than you have been alive. He is known as a great collector of art. I dare say he is looking for the crown jewel for his collection."
She coloured under Shelton's pitying look, fearing he was right. The Earl of Moncrief, who was easily 30 years her senior, had examined her the way one might study a piece of jewellery or statuary for flaws or defects.
"He will offer for you,"
Shelton said with certitude. "That is hardly the sort of comment you should be making to me, my lord." And it was certainly not the sort of comment Selina wanted to hear.
"I'm sorry, my lady, but, well, it just rankles to know that a man like Moncrief can aspire to somebody like you while I..."
He broke off and gave a self-deprecating laugh.
"Let's just say that the two of us are in a similar bind, Lady Selina."
Selina was no fool. She knew that was Shelton's way of saying that he, too, needed to marry for money. She felt a pang of disappointment at his confession, but couldn't say she was surprised. He gave her a determinedly cheerful smile and said,
"Just because our roads are destined to run in different directions does not mean we can't enjoy each other's company for the rest of the season. I can't tell you how much it would cheer me to know there was at least one person who wasn't looking at me as if I were the human equivalent of a pheasant to be hunted, stuffed, and mounted."
Selina laughed at the image. "You are very, very naughty to talk to me so candidly, Lord Shelton. But I must admit, it is such a relief to know others feel as I do." The smile he gave her warmed her through and through.
"I am delighted to have found a kindred spirit, Lady Selina. We must resolve here and now to support each other through the remainder of the season. Will you promise to be my friend, no matter what others say about me?"
Her aunt's warning flickered through her mind, but Selina brushed it aside like an errant insect.
"Friends?"
he prodded, looking so hopeful that she laughed. "Friends, my lord." He grinned, and quite suddenly, the ballroom was much brighter. Selina had made her first friend in London, somebody who liked her for herself.
"Well, my dear,"
her aunt said as their coach rolled away later that night.
"You have taken every bit as marvellously as I knew you would. Not only a dance with Moncrief, but one with the Duke of Chatham as well."
"And one with Lord Shelton too," Selina gleefully thought to herself.
"Oh, what a feather in your cap it would be to secure Chatham, my dear. He is the biggest marital prize since that ironmonger's daughter snatched up the Marquis of Shaftesbury a while back."
Her aunt made a piqued moo.
"Now, there was a waste of a lovely, charming and delicious man. It is such a shame when an attractive man must sacrifice himself because his family needs money."
Selina thought that was a rather ironic comment,
given her own circumstances, but she kept her opinion to herself. Instead, she said,
"Shaftesbury, didn't he suffer a dreadful accident a short while ago?"
She was desperate to lure her aunt away from the subject of Chatham. While she didn't dislike the Duke, she could not see herself married to such a terrifyingly stern and unsmiling man.
"Yes, he did. And Lady Shaftesbury died in the same accident,"
her aunt said, her tone musing.
"It is almost a year since he was left a widower. I wonder if it is possible..." Aunt Ellen trailed off, leaving her thought unfinished in a way that Selina was becoming accustomed to. A few moments later, her aunt shook herself and said,
"But never mind about Shaftesbury, my dear. It is Chatham we must set our minds to."
She tapped her finger against her chin, her expression thoughtful.
"I will have to discover if he is going to Lady Shield's Venetian breakfast this next week. If he is, you will have something new to wear, something in that shade of rose that so becomes you."
"Oh, Aunt Ellen, you've given me so many gowns already."
"No, no, I am quite determined on something new, my dear."
"Thank you so much for inviting me to London and making my time here so pleasurable, Aunt Ellen."
Selina was grateful to her aunt, but as much as she loved the pretty dresses and visiting all the magnificent houses, she couldn't help wishing that she enjoyed the balls and parties more. But the truth was that she found it all a bit empty.
"Oh, pish tush, it is my pleasure. I assure you, Selina, it is a joy to launch you."
Her aunt's smile faltered slightly, and Selina knew she was probably thinking about Hyacinth, Selina's older sister, whom her aunt had briefly attempted to launch before admitting defeat and inviting Selina to take High's place. High loathed socialising of any sort and had begged Aunt Ellen to allow her to serve as companion to the dowager Lady Fitzroy, a rather crabby old lady who had the excellent sense to take a liking to Selina's reserved sibling. While Aunt Ellen had been elated to have High off her hands, she would be scandalised if she ever discovered that after the dowager went to bed every night, High dressed in men's clothing and slipped out of the house to play cards at various gambling hells. Her sister was determined to win enough money to pay the interest on the loan their father had taken on Queen's Bower, their home, before the Dunners took the house and tossed their family into the street. While High was doing her best to save them all from disaster, and selflessly risking her life every single night on the streets of London in the process, Selina was determined to do her best. She did not have the skills like either High or their oldest sister, Aurelia, who was an illustrator, but she did have one marketable item, her person. As much as it hurt to admit it, Lord Shelton had been painfully correct earlier when he'd said that he and Selina were not destined for each other. She had barely 3 months to do what her mother had groomed her to do all her life, marry well and save her family from destruction. Was marrying for money mercenary? Absolutely. Would it lead to a grand passion? Probably not. But a marriage of convenience didn't necessarily preclude love, or, at the very least, affection, did it? Selina desperately hoped not, because that would be a grim, unbearable future indeed. Chapter 2. 3 months later. How in the world could one person cry so much?
"Oh, my dear Selina," Aunt Ellen wailed. "I cannot delay the inevitable any longer. I simply must write to your poor mother today. We have received no word from His Grace of Chatham, and it is clear that he has had no luck finding that wretched sister of yours."
She collapsed into yet another fit of sobbing,
and Selina knew it would be some time before her aunt would be fit to resume the conversation. Not that there was anything to say that hadn't already been said on the
Sample complete. Ready to continue?